you. So I'm going to speak to a little bit different advocacy, and this is issue advocacy work, and some work that we're doing, in particular with the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, for an initiative called Voices for Healthy Kids. We started this initiative in 2012, sorry, February. We were first awarded the opportunity in 2011. We started the initiative in February of 2012, so we're 18 months in. So my lessons learned, I'm going to talk about are first some of the lessons that we learned in particular from tobacco control, which is largely where we're modeling this work from in terms of the organizational structure and the approaches that we're taking, but then give you a little sense in 18 months of really standing up a major infrastructure to support issue advocacy across the nation, some of the early lessons that we've learned in this work. So here's how this is set up, and this is a pretty big initiative. I think we've, in 2 years, it's about $25 million of investment that between the foundation and the American Heart Association that we're making in this work. And these are really the major components, and again, building on particularly the model of the Campaign for Tobacco-Free Kids. When the foundation approached us, it made it easy for us to think about how to do the work, because they said, how would you like to become the Campaign for Tobacco-Free Kids for Childhood Obesity Policy? And at AHA, we do a lot of work in tobacco control. We're very familiar with the model. And so largely, again, learning lessons from that work, built it in the same kind of framework. So the first and probably some of the hardest work that we've done in year one is around the national policy priorities and goals with state and local alignment. What that really means is in tobacco control over time, we evolved into having three main priorities for how we did our work. For those of you who are in the area, we have excise taxes, smoke-free air policy, and funding for tobacco control programs. In childhood obesity, it was kind of a let a thousand flowers bloom type of approach. There are a lot of different things that you can do in terms of policy. And quite frankly, in order to be able to support and seed movements across the nation, we really had to come up with a much smaller set than 1,000 policies that we would be supporting, both in terms of the campaigns we funded on the ground, as well as the tools and technical assistance and everything that we need to do. I'm very jealous, frankly, of the Campaign for Tobacco-Free Kids to have three and to really be able to focus. And we got it down to 18, which I'll talk about in a little bit, but at least it's better than 1,000. The second was really around coalition building. We have very strong coalitions, both at the national as well at the state and community level in tobacco, so a lot of our work early on has been around national coalitions. Some national best practice campaigns. Issue advocacy work is a lot like political campaigns. A lot of the same kinds of investments we make, message testing, how to effectively communicate our messages, how do we incentivize people to actually call their legislators, to actually get them to want to do that hard work of picking up the phone or sending that email. It's the same kind of work that you see. In fact, we use some of the same firms and the same operatives that are often used in political campaigns, or the same work that we do in issue advocacy. So a lot of our work in the early on has, and that was definitely a lesson learned, in tobacco control, where we have over time got much better in terms of how we communicated and made it clear to the public that they deserved the right to breathe clean air, and as a result they should call their legislator, and as a result created a movement of smoke-free air across the nation. The next thing was strong investments in state and local campaigns. These are often expensive campaigns. For those of you who may have heard about the recent success we had in Berkeley, I don't know exactly when the numbers come down, what was spent on the sugar, sweetened beverage tax efforts in Berkeley. I know we spent, we being broadly the public health community, you know, somewhere in the hundreds of thousands against what are millions and millions of dollars spent on the other side of those debates. So the one thing we knew we needed were the actual people doing the work on the ground. They needed things like lobbyists and media advisors and ways to pay for media and all those different tactical investments that they need to make in their campaigns. We're now making those investments with a combination of dollars available for non-lobbying through the foundation and then lobbying dollars from the American Heart Association. Finally, it was really around technical assistance and coordination. Often, if you're doing that work at the state and community level, it can be a little isolated. You can feel a little isolated. You may feel a little bit alone. You may get some technical assistance, a webinar, something like that. One of the things we've worked very hard on is trying to connect these campaigns. We're funding, for example, most of the states in the South on healthy food financing campaigns right now, for example. And all those states get to be connected. They get great technical assistance from our lead hub, the Food Trust, but they also get connected with one another through a lot of regional meetings and other opportunities. So a lot of our early investments and learnings have been around, if you're going to create a movement, have people feel like they're part of something bigger than themselves, And the important work they're doing at that community, we want to value that, but again, also make sure that they're connected up to the work happening at a state level, and for those working at that level, that they feel part of these national movements that we're hopefully working to create through our work. So I'll give you a, go into a little bit of detail and a few of the lessons, things that we've done in year one, as well as some of the lessons we've learned in each of these aspects. So first with the national policy priorities, these were the six target areas. I know that's hard to see. And again, if you're interested in learning more about the actual issue advocacy work that we do in each of these areas, I'm nowhere close to the time to go into any details. But the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation came to us with these six target areas that they really wanted us to help to influence through public policy. And they're very broad, though. You can say improve the nutritional quality of snack foods and beverages in schools. There's a lot you could do under there. And so a lot of our work has been, again, around what are the, in particular, the opportunities at the state and community level where we have an important role in terms of implementation, codifying. So if you work in this area, you may be familiar with the Smart Snacks rules, came out federally. Well, now we're working to codify those rules, for example, in state law. So these are the steps that we took. This was, again, a really important learning for us. There's the broad policy targets from the foundation, but then we had to turn those into public policy priorities. What was the role for public policy in this work? And then establish what we call policy bottom lines. And this is actually the hardest work to do. So how this works is, again, let's say you start with healthy food financing. So the policy target is increasing food access in underserved communities. The policy priority that we identified there was appropriations through your state legislature to fund healthy food financing campaigns. Still very broad. There's a lot of things you could do under that area. The next step, and this is really working with many of our partners that work in this area, the Food Trust and other national leaders, is then to develop what we call policy bottom lines. And this was an extremely important lesson that we learned in tobacco control, was to make sure that all of the national partners really agreed to what is the minimum policy that we will accept in terms of our advocacy. So a good example of this from smoke-free air work that we did was we got to a point in those efforts that unless it included both bars and restaurants, we would oppose that. Just restaurants wasn't good enough. That we as a movement, the national leaders, and as well as our partners that are doing the work in states and communities, agreed that that was our policy bottom line. That if it was restaurants only, we would oppose. Our policy bottom line was bars and restaurants. So how we've applied this in this work is to do that for each of our policy areas. So in healthy food financing, a good example is we set a minimum amount for the appropriation that we'll work on. We'll say if it goes below that certain amount, it's just no longer worth our effort in terms of that campaign. And in many times it's like a level of like $5 million, that unless the state's willing to commit that level of appropriations, that's really what it takes for us to put our precious resources behind that campaign. Another policy bottom line in that area is around the expectation that if we're going to build a grocery store and through grants and loans, provide the resources to do that in an underserved neighborhood, there should be an expectation that the food that's offered there is healthy. So that's translated then into a policy bottom line that says, in our case, that at least 35% of the floor space in that grocery store must be dedicated to healthy food. So it gives you a sense, again, of how we've begun to apply that lesson learned in some of the work that we're now doing in childhood obesity. In terms of national coalitions, one of the lessons learned from tobacco is, again, really get the national partners around the table and really be strategic about our investments. This is the initial group that we brought together under Voices for Healthy Kids in terms of the first year. These are all organizations that have some resource that they dedicate to the work. It's an organization of organizations, and each of these organizations has committed some level of resources in terms of whether it's the research work that they're doing or some of the technical assistance that they can provide. But again, each of these organizations is dedicated in some way. The other thing that we did, though, a lesson learned in year one, was that the childhood obesity movement, unlike the tobacco control movement, is not a single movement. It's actually a confederation of movements. For people who work in childhood obesity work, they may identify with a single area of a focus for our work. So you may only care about school foods, or you may only be working on sugar-sweetened beverage issues, or only working on physical activity in the built environment. So another really critical thing for us was we're organized into each of those areas into a hub. There's a hub lead, and then each of those hub leads is then creating its own coalition to help provide an opportunity for perhaps national leaders that feel that are aligned with just one of these areas, that they find a home, perhaps not in the overall movement that we're building, but in that particular area. In terms of national best practice campaigns, are really a lot of our work in year one, again, has been learning from how to effectively run issue advocacy campaigns, been a really large investment in message research. We have a major project underway, focus groups, polling, looking at baseline, but really refining, hopefully, in the next few months, a lot of the message work that we're doing. We also did the first message research that we could find, at least, on the issue of preemption, which is a really important issue for those that are familiar with it in terms of protecting our ability to work at the community level, at the state level. So we're really excited to be hopefully rolling that out in the coming months and become help position advocates to be even more effective in terms of some of these areas of policy work. I'll skip over this I'll say a little bit about our toolkits. The other lesson learned is there are advocates that we'll be able to touch. You know, we're funding, I think, maybe 28 campaigns right now. We'll be up to about 40 by the end of the year. But there's a lot of great work that we can help support, perhaps not as directly with funding, or perhaps with direct technical assistance. So we're trying to create a lot of tools that are very widely disseminated and available to bring people in who may be these seasoned advocates. There's a lot in these toolkits that we've developed that are available for really seasoned people, social media strategies, other things, fact sheets, a lot of template materials. If you want to run an ad tomorrow, we've got a lot of ad content, communications content. But there are also toolkits that are available for people that are doing maybe small P policy or just maybe want to change their hospitals and eliminate unhealthy food items in a hospital setting, for example. There's a lot of great tips there, a lot of great resources for advocates at all levels. So that's been really important to us to help broaden the movement and the opportunities beyond just the people who are at the state legislatures and the city councils. I'm actually going to skip over this and talk a little bit about our funding and how we structured it, because this was another thing where we see advocates on the ground in a lot of different stages of development of their work in campaigns. So we had to make a variety of different funding opportunities available. So this is a little bit of a busy slide, but it gives you a sense of how we fund these campaigns. It's everything from what we call our open RFA. It's really the portal for grantees who may not have ever had a campaign funded before. They know they have a good idea, they want to go to the legislature, they want to do some work, or they've got a regulatory approach that they'd like to take an opportunity. The first was this open RFA. So it essentially gets you a coordinator, somebody to help coordinate your campaign to do some of the work. And then as you go beyond that are really tactical tools that we can make available, everything from polling, focus group work, again, buying some ad time. But the other critical learning for us in year one is we can't have enough lobbying resources. The third pillar there are the lobbying resources that we make available. So it's been both an opportunity and a challenge to think through how to make strategic use of these resources. So for those of you that this may be a new concept, foundation dollars, in particular now with the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation dollars, cannot be used for lobbying, and lobbying from a legal sense, the calls to action, meeting with your legislator to ask him or her to support your work. Those things that are legally grassroots or direct lobbying are things we can't use these funds for. But there are a lot of things in advocacy we can use non-lobbying resources for that help further many of these campaigns. But then there's that point where you do need those lobbying resources, where you've got to the point where you're in the legislative session and now you need some lobbying. So that's been really critical. We did this very well in tobacco control, in particular, of really making use of, in that point, Smokeless States dollars and some other dollars we had available and complementing those with American Cancer Society, American Heart, American Lung Association dollars. And that's what we're doing here, in particular with American Heart Association dollars. Making available to the best that we can within the resources we have as much as these campaigns need to have available. And I referenced the Berkeley work. That is because it was a ballot initiative, it was 100% lobbying. So all of the dollars that went forward, for example, under that, because the nature of the legal issues there are all lobbying dollars. So those are dollars you couldn't use Robert Wood Johnson Foundation dollars or any foundation dollars for, and we used all lobbying in terms of our investments there. Pardon me, fine. And then the final part there is rapid response funds. And this was actually another, again, lesson learned from our work and that we continue to learn from, which is there's just sometimes that you don't need resources actually for campaigns. Or you think you have everything that you need, and then you end up right at the end of the finish line, and you find out the governor is threatening a veto, or you just have, you know, one key legislator who's holding it up on the, you know, from coming to the floor for a vote, where you just hit some kind of roadblock, but you're that close. So again, another key investment that we're making. In fact, we just got in our first application for some local work on this for the last couple of months. A rapid response grant, so you're at the end of your campaign, you've got taken it all the way almost to the finish line, making resources available right at the end. And here's some information available for those of you who might be interested in applying for these grants. Just go to voicesforhealthykids.org. I'll talk finally a little bit about the technical assistance work that we do. Again, what we find for each of the coalitions that we work with is they're all in very different places. You know, we have some that are extremely seasoned advocates. They don't need much from us. Just they frankly need the resources, and we just need to step out of their way, perhaps connect them with other advocates. So a lot of our work has really been, you know, we do some general, there's some general technical approach to technical assistance we provide, but a lot of it ends up being customized. And as a result, we actually have four staff across the nation where their job is just to work with coalitions to really diagnose the technical assistance they need, see where they are at, and get them what they need. And then on the other hand, we do have some coalitions where they're brand new, and we want that. We want this for sustainability. We want to not just bring in the old advocates that have been doing this for a long time, bring in new groups that may or may not have, you know, a lot of experience in this area, and help them to become better with their work. So the role the technical assistance has played are not just, again, some national webinars, really customized work on the ground that really works coalition by coalition to assess their needs and provide them with the work. Another really critical thing for us has been to really introduce this initiative across the nation, not just through national meetings like this, but really going down on the ground. In the first year, we had seven regional trainings or orientations for Voices for Healthy Kids. It brought in a whole lot of additional partners beyond just American Heart Association or American Cancer Society, some of the organizations that are known for doing this work, but a lot of other organizations that were brand new that were intentionally invited to help to spread the base of organizations committed to this work. We're doing four of them in early spring. They cover advocates from all 50 states. We invite them to come in, learn a little bit about us, and then hopefully, more importantly, learn from one another, apply for the funds, and run campaigns back in their states. I'll talk a little bit about our focus on health equity, and this has been a really critical learning for me of how to think a little bit differently about our policy work, particularly through the lens of health equity. A really important concept, and I have nowhere close to enough time to give it justice, in terms of how it's really changed our work at AHA, is something called targeted universalism. And if you're interested in this area, I encourage you to take a look. Because up to the point, I think, that we really dug in and began to understand the implications of this approach, we thought about policy from a very universal perspective. Or sometimes it was we either thought about a targeted or universal. And what it's done for us is it's really changed us to think from, it's not to say that universal policy is bad, it's that you have to think about universal policy so that you also think about the implications from a targeted perspective. So apply it to like physical education. At AHA, we used to think about physical education at policy as we're going to require 225 minutes of physical education in schools. In middle school, for example, isn't that wonderful? And we would go out and we would, at least works in some few states, pass that law. The problem became an implementation. Who do you think actually got that policy? It was often more affluent school districts that could afford to do the policy change. So we actually just exacerbated disparities, perhaps, by going after that intervention. And so, 1 minute. This has been really important for us to really think every policy lever by policy lever, every priority by priority, about what are the implications for our work. It's not to say we won't do the universal, but what are those targeted strategies that need to be embedded within that policy. And if you're more interested in this, I encourage you to take a look. And if you're even more interested, we could share with you some of how that's begun to change the way that we write our policy. So before I go, I just want to represent the work of our partners in this initiative. They're called our hubs. They're leading organizations that really are extremely important in our work, everything from their policy expertise, the coalition building that they do, the leadership that they provide in this work. All leaders that bring in other leaders in terms of this work. So I'll end by saying we need you. If you're interested in the work, we need you to become an advocate. We have a tool called PreventABC.net where you can stay engaged. We need your help in organizing. And also, if you can and you're interested, take advantage of the funding we have available to run issue advocacy campaigns, the tools that we're developing in our work. And if you want to learn more, want to follow us, want to like us, all of that, here's my contact information. Thank you.